At times it seemed this winter would never end. At times I could swear I had been looking at a lifetime of dry and empty clouds and facing a relentless wind too often filled with dust and corn shucks. This winter had tested me with a hard and unforgiving climate that kept reminding me that we live in a semi-arid region of the country. For the meteorologically challenged, that means almost desert. Balmy days in the 80s were followed by bone-chilling cold snaps, with too many gale-force wildfire-warning winds thrown into the mix. But just when I was ready to throw in the trowel, buy a copy of Sunset Magazine, and look at real estate on the California coast, a light appeared. Not at the end of the tunnel, but in my garden. A tiny bit of yellow showed up at the base of the north water faucet. At first, I thought it was another piece of trash blown in by the infernal wind, but upon closer inspection, I found the first sign that there was hope after all. The season of green would surely come again, because the first crocus had appeared. One of the few flowers to be listed as late winter on the blooming charts, crocus are the earliest bulbs, though they aren't really a bulb at all, but a corm and related to the iris family. They often push up through straggly patches of snow to make their yearly debut, and these low-growing harbingers of spring can succeed in almost any setting, being tough enough to face the blustery winds and roller coaster temperatures of March. Color choices include gold, lavender, purple, and white in solid or variegated versions. The largest crocuses are the Dutch hybrids, which grow to 5 inches in height and have a much larger bloom than their common cousins. However, on the high plains, it might be best to think in common terms, because my experience with the hybrids is that they often get flattened to ground level anyway by our infamous spring winds. But whatever the size or color, they're always welcome guests in my garden. Because these tough but tiny titans are so easy to grow, and because they are so unassuming, appearing as a bright spot in defiance of the elements and fading into their surroundings just when we have other things to look at, I've started adding them to my fall planting schedule on a regular basis. I think they do best as accents, planted half a dozen together in out-of-the-way places rather than layered into beds and drifts. Tuck some around the edges of your gardens or flower beds, along a walkway, at the base of a shrub or small tree, or by a doorway or lawn ornament. When all around is gray and muted, it doesn't take many crocuses to draw the eye and lift the heart. You can even plant them at random in a grass lawn to give an early spring meadow appearance. However, if you choose this route to showcase your crocus blooms, be sure to let them keep their grassy striped foliage for at least 6 weeks before mowing them over. Like tulips and other bulbs and corms, they need their leaves to provide next year's flower. In addition to their ability to banish the winter doldrums, crocus can be working plants. They are an early pollen source for bees, and Crocus sativa produces the precious saffron used by gourmet cooks. The plant was first documented by the ancient Greeks and Egyptians. Cleopatra used a body lotion made from the oil of crocus. From southern Europe, the plant spread across Asia. The golden stigmas from an oriental variety produced the coloring agent for a brilliant yellow dye. And during the Italian Renaissance, crocus corms were sent from the Holy Roman Emperor to the Netherlands to become a staple in their flowering economy. In the language of flowers, the Victorians claimed the crocus stood for youthful gladness. At the end of this winter of discontent, as I survey the crocus scattered like golden stars on an earthen sky, I couldn't agree more.